Focus Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The Beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Welcome in to The Beat, 720 WGN. Adam Hoge actually off today. The incredibly good-looking, incredibly talented Sam Panionovich in the studio. Hello, Sammy
P. Hey, Mark, happy Sunday.
Jared Payton, you feeling the Broncos up 14-6, huh?
I'm actually kind of upset right now, though, Carm, because you gave Hoge some love, and then you gave Sam love for being, like, beautiful, or whatever you want to call him. I don't get any love for looking good.
I mean, I feel like I do that all the time, and you should know it, but you're the most beautiful, and the most beautiful goes last, and I was going to give you love, but you kind of now have made me feel bad, and I don't know where to go with it. But, Jared, you're a beautiful man, and we're so happy and so fortunate to be here with you today. How's that?
Well, I appreciate it. And just to give our listeners one little tidbit, the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award finalists will be announced at halftime of this game. So it's a pretty cool thing. I already know who they are. I can't let the cat out the bag.
Very, very cool. We'll creep up on it and give it to you at halftime. Rich King, legendary Chicago broadcaster, will be with us at 3:35. Kendall Gill from CSN and, of course, a former Chicago Bull, 5:05. Also incredibly good-looking and incredibly talented, and knows a little bit about hockey as well. Judd Surratt is actually in studio with us right now. Hi, Judd.
I appreciate the love. Thank you.
At any time. What's wrong with the Blackhawks, man? I mean, I thought they were going to never lose again. Now two in a row. I figure we throw a panic fire right now.
I knew you'd go there.
312-981-7200. Light them up. Dial it up.
Light them up.
Let's go post-game show.
I just think that emotionally and physically, they came up a little bit short through that trip in Florida. Obviously, it was a big game for the Tampa Bay Lightning and for the Florida Panthers. But they just did not have the pace and the speed and the intensity in order to win those games. And you have to at least match your opponents in that regard. And I think against Florida, they were a hungry team. Jonathan Toews had mentioned it. For Florida, they had also won 12 straight games. They went winless in their next four games. Now, all of a sudden, they were in jeopardy of falling out of the top spot in the Atlantic Division. So they needed to come up with a big effort. It's not easy. You're not going to be ready to go every single game for all 82 in the National Hockey League. It's how do you get yourself into the game? How do you manage the game? Unfortunately, they got off to a sluggish start and really could never respond.
They've got the bullseye on their chest every game, though. I mean, this is what happens. Whoever they play, that team is trying to come in and prove that they can hang with the Blackhawks, and that'll happen. They're also due for a little bit of missed puck luck. I mean, you win 12 in a row, eventually that puck is going to hit the crossbar, or Corey Crawford's going to have one wicked off the glove. I'm not really concerned, because this team is still in first place in the West. They have guys that know how to win, and I think they've done a tremendous job, Judd, and you know full well about this. They located their six or seven core pieces, and they know that they had to lose talent, bring in younger players, but they picked the right six guys to set the tone.
It's a great core, and obviously it's a core, Sammy, that everybody around the National Hockey League is jealous of. When you have Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Nicholas Hjalmarsson, Corey Crawford.
You haven't mentioned Marian Hossa yet.
Marian Hossa's right there as well. So you're talking about guys that all the other 29 general managers in the National Hockey League would love to have those pieces on their team. But what Stan and his crew have done in hockey operations, and it's not easy because of the salary cap and the big contracts that, listen, Toews and Kane earned, you have to be able to fill in with guys that economically make sense but are also productive for you. And if you look at a guy like Artemi Panarin, if you look at Eric Gustafson, if you look at even a guy like Artem Anisimov, you sign a number one center, you bring him in, and now you've extended him on a contract, he makes a lot of sense for you. But it's the ability to try and find those pieces to fill in. It's not easy. Every team in the National Hockey League in the Blackhawks position or similar position, they have to go through the same thing. Just to give you an example, with the LA Kings, they just signed Anze Kopitar to a similar contract that Toews and Kane got. Well, now they'd like to try and somehow bring back Milan Lucic, who's made an incredible impact for that team this year. The question is, how does a guy like Dean Lombardi do it? Fine, if you're going to pay him, you're going to have to get rid of somebody else.
Judd, during that streak, I mean, it's just amazing to watch how the Blackhawks, especially, I mean, a big part was scoring, but it just wasn't coming from that second line. You started to see that first line with Shaw up there on that first line. I mean, and I've understood how hard it is to go through a streak or to keep winning, but to see how they were doing it, especially on both sides of the ice, to me was just amazing.
No, it's incredible, Jarrett, and I think it starts with Corey Crawford and really the goaltending you were getting throughout that entire run. Crawford, who's going to get the start tonight, he's only allowed 14 goals in 9 games in January. He's been spectacular. Then it was that structured defense that you were playing out in front, and the four-line rotation started to get going. Andrew Shaw, Jonathan Toews, Marian Hossa, they were hot, actually, just before the Blackhawks went out on the road. The second line continued to do their thing, but then all of a sudden you saw some production from guys like Rasmussen, Ponick, Philip Deneau, Teuvo Teravainen, and Andrew Desjardins. Those guys started to chip in. You get a few points, a few extra plays from the guys in the back end, and put it all together, and guys who understand how to win. You hear that all the time. Well, these guys understand how to win. They understand how to find ways during the course of games to pick up those 2 points. There are other teams that are younger that don't have that type of core, that don't have that type of mentality, and right now they're either on the bubble or out of the playoff picture.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN with you till 5:30 when Judd will be back with the pregame, the Blackhawks and the Blues at the United Center tonight. All right, so we had this conversation. Biggest credit for the 12-game streak, Patrick Kane, Corey Crawford, somebody else that you want to throw in there? I mean, who's – some people think that Crawford carried them to wins that they had no business getting. Would you agree with that?
I thought Crawford was exceptional throughout, even including the loss that he suffered against the Tampa Bay Lightning. You're talking about a guy, Mark, who's only allowed, again, 14 goals during the last 9 games. I want to say it's 29 in the last 19. So I think you have to start first and foremost with goaltending, and then you have to move it out to the way that this team has played defensively. Defense wins in the National Hockey League. I think it tweeted it out about a week or two ago that if you looked at all the division leaders currently in the National Hockey League, which today is Florida and Washington in the East, Chicago and L.A. in the West, all four of those teams rank in the top 4 in goals against. You stop the puck, you play a structured defensive game, you're going to give yourself a chance. And obviously with the key, with the skill that the Blackhawks possess, you're going to get a few goals and you're going to win a ton of games. And that's what really led to the streak.
It helps to have the skill and the talent, probably 3 or 4 future Hall of Famers. But you mentioned the S word, structure. And that comes from the head coach, who sometimes gets lost in translation, too, with all the talent. Can you explain what makes him so important, not only day-to-day, being able to manage players and keep them healthy, but long-term, because they're always ready when the playoffs start?
It's a good question. I think from a defensive standpoint, I remember when Joel took over, what was that, back in the 08-09 season, he spent, it felt like, the entire week working from basically the blue line back to his entire net. And I think that that's the type of structure and what he has stressed basically since he started his tenure here in Chicago. And I think that he's gotten his core players to buy in, even those offensive-minded players. People want to talk about Patrick Kane. How does he get these opportunities? Zach Parise had a great story the other time. He said, you know what, a lot of people think that he's a guy who cherry picks or cheats defensively in order to generate these chances. He doesn't. He comes back and he plays a responsible defensive game. Those guys have bought in. You add Marian Hossa to that mix, and I think all those guys have learned from Marian, not only on the ice but off the ice, how to maintain, how to get yourself ready, how to be a pro night in and night out. But I think the long term, when you talk about what Joel's been able to do and what makes him such a successful coach, is that he has he can relate to players, I think, very well. He played in the league for a long time. I think he played about 800 games in the National Hockey League, spread out between a couple of different teams. I think he's been through a lot of different situations. And if you get Joel away from the media, even with the media, he has a way about him that it's easy to communicate with him. I think he respects the players and the room, and he lets those guys run things, and he's a very good communicator. And I think if you add all those things up between the structure, the knowledge, the ability to relate to people, the ability to communicate his points, you can see the amount of wins that this guy has racked up, second all time.
Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city, with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. Judd, can you stay for one quick
sure.
more second? Awesome. JP's got a question about how to raise his son, and he wants to bounce that off you. And I want to know if you think that this year's version.
I think he can do just fine by himself.
Herm, you should also know that I try and go out of my way now to make Q laugh. And I've gotten pretty decent at it.
All right. I'm excited. We can delve into that, too, coming back. Blackhawks talk right here on 720 WGN.
Darling moves it to Van Riemsdyk along the far board. Spun it behind the net near corner. Skuderi turned it over. Here's a shot from Ekblad. He scores. Skuderi put the puck up the near boards, hoping Panarin would be there. But in moved Ekblad, and from the top of the right wing circle, he blistered a shot past Darling. 4-0 Florida.
We didn't start well, and got a couple goals go in, and it was you're down 4-0 before you know it, and it was just there was no push, and there was not a lot of energy tonight. But it was one of those games where they started well, and they were the better team.
That is Coach Q. You can't focus on hockey when you're in Florida, honestly. I mean, dead a winter.
It was cold there. It was cold and rainy, I understand. Plenty easy to concentrate.
How about this? The Florida Panthers, have defeated the two 2015 Stanley Cup finalists on consecutive days. The Blackhawks and then the Lightning. That hasn't been done in 25 years.
Is Brian Campbell still doing stuff for the old Panthers?
Soupy had a goal the other night. He's playing real well.
God bless him.
Among the league leaders in plus-minus, still logging a ton of ice time, and he will finally be done with that long 7-year contract that the Blackhawks signed him to. It'll be interesting to see where he plays next year. Remember, he lives here during the offseason.
Maybe he ends up back in Black Island. Hey, you never know. Jared Payton, I know you wanted to ask Judd about how to raise your son.
No. You know what? Judd said it best. He knows. Yeah. Only I can do that. But for a 3.5-year-old to sit here and during that streak, I mean, my son was on edge every single night. And then he would – listen, Judd, he woke up in the morning. There's video proof of this at 6:45 in the morning and told my wife and I to call him Kaner. He doesn't want to be called by his name because he just wants to go downstairs and score goals. And so it's just amazing to me to see how this team has kind of captivated the younger generation of these Hawks fans. Fans and how they're just latching on to all this greatness that they're seeing every single night.
Well, Jared, I think it's not just the generation that they've captured, but you know how that sort of dispersed itself. A ton of women I see at the game all the time. I would say the crowd is half and half. It's obviously very young, and for a lot of people, they are new to the Blackhawks. You know, for a different generation of fans. They grew up with Bobby Hull and Stan Mikita, and then you have to sort of fast forward. There was sort of a void there until guys like Dennis Savard, Troy Murray, Steve Larmer, Al Secor, Doug Wilson, Murray Bannerman, those guys sort of popped into the fray, and then you have another gap, and then Jeremy Roenick gets here, and then you had a longer gap, and then obviously Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane get here, and they seem to have captivated a lot of the fans here in Chicago, and it's a style that they play with. That I think is a lot of fun to watch in addition to the type of personalities that they are and what they've brought to the ice. So it's exciting to see. You're going to have to get an 88 jersey for your son.
Oh, man. He has one. It's a little bit big, but he already has one.
I'm sure he's going to grow into it.
And John McDonough and Jay Blunk just hit a grand slam that hasn't landed yet. I mean, just growing the fan base. They didn't come on TV for my generation until I was a sophomore in college. So we couldn't even watch the game. You had to get the scores in the paper or look at them online and figure out what the Blackhawks have done. But you talk about the growth of fans. Kids I grew up with who couldn't name a player on the team now all of a sudden have a rotation of sweaters that they wear to games. And they text me and say, I'm at the game. You didn't like hockey 10 years ago. So they've done well with that. And it's also created this spiral of youth hockey in the city. I mean, they're putting rinks everywhere. The Blackhawks are helping out with the charities and everything like that. And there are rinks popping up on the south side. We only had two. There was SIA at 127th, and then there was HF. Now they're growing, and they're coming up everywhere. And it's great to see.
And you can start to see guys with Chicago or Illinois addresses making their way into the National Hockey League or starting to get drafted into the National Hockey League. There's this whole new generation that you're talking about that is just getting into the game. They're going to start to get older, get better, matriculate into the game. Because I think it used to be that if you were a great athlete here, you didn't necessarily want to necessarily play hockey. Access to it wasn't necessarily easy. I grew up in Arlington Heights, and the nearest rink at that point was Rolling Meadows. I can tell you that right now, if you grew up in that area, there are a ton of different places where you can now get access to ice, and there are a lot more kids who have that opportunity to play. So there are opportunities out there that just didn't exist 20 or 30 years ago for kids that are growing up in this area. And it's great to see. It's just great to see ice popping up all over the place. I mentioned to you guys that Wicker Park crowd-funded ice for the first time since I've been living in there, and that's been more than a decade. It's been great to see. I see people out there all the time. They actually have to have set times when you can bring out sticks and pucks and also play pickup games and rat hockey, and the ice is always full. It's great. And If we didn't have a game today, I'd probably be out there right now.
Well, growing up for me, my friends all played for the Falcons back in the Northern Burbs, which was a fine organization. I'm sure maybe still is today. And now when I go and I play my rough and tumble tennis at McFetrich, I mean, there's lunatics like yourself out there, 50-year-olds playing at 11 o'clock.
You call me 50?
Well,
you call me a lunatic?
I'm calling you.
I think he called you both.
I'm calling you the guy that I see out there. What are you?
You short, Jarrett? Now you're calling me that?
You look good. Let me walk that back. Now I'm in trouble. But I see, you know, these guys are out there at 11:30 at night because ice time is expensive.
It is very hard to get ice time, and there's going to be more in the city. The Blackhawks are going to break ground here very soon on the new practice facility that's going to open up where Malcolm X College was. Obviously, they still have to demolish that building and then put those two rinks up. And the Blackhawks are only going to use that when they can't get into the United Center. And so you're going to have a lot of availability for people out there to use two full sheets of ice, which is going to be great because, as you mentioned, late at night, that's the time when those are the only few times where you can get some open ice and get that opportunity. More rinks, more opportunity.
And they're out there, so you can't even get it then, at least on most nights when I'm out there, they're playing. Real quick, your favorite Blackhawk growing up, young Judd Surratt.
Dennis Savard. No, I love Dennis Savard. In fact, that's what really got me hooked on the game. A buddy of mine who grew up across the street, he invited me over to watch the Blackhawks. I saw Dennis Savard working his magic on the ice, and I heard Pat Foley for the first time, and I knew exactly where I wanted to be.
And you're not willing to say that this year's team has the chance to be better than last year's team, or are you?
I think that this team has the chance to be as good as last year's team and win a Stanley Cup.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, Blackhawks and the Blues tonight. Judd will be there at 5:30. When we come back, Rich King, legendary broadcaster, will be with us, who's retiring, which I actually thought Rich King would never retire, like ever. Why would you retire? The guy had the greatest gig going, but we'll find out.
Thanks, Judd.
Yeah, Judd. By the way, thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. We're coming back with the big story, too, in news as well. It's as we're covering that blizzard, Veronica Carter will have that for you next. 720 WGN.
I pretty much learned this business from Rich. He was one of the guys who hired me first in the business when I was a student at Northwestern. And I learned a lot from watching the guy, the way he interacted with other people, the way he maintained his professionalism, but treated everybody with respect and showed that you can be a decent person, a good guy, in what can be a very cutthroat business at times. So there isn't anybody I respect more in this business or have enjoyed my professional relationship and my personal relationship with more than Rich King.
There you have it, a tremendous tribute to the retiring superstar that is joining us now, Rich King, WGN-TV, for a little while longer. Rich, you actually hired Dave Ennett. How did you last in the business this long?
I don't know, but that was a very nice tribute from Dave. I really appreciate that very much. He and I go back a long, long way, back to the mid-70s when he was a young writer who once fell asleep on his typewriter on an overnight shift. But he's a great guy, obviously a great talent. I'm so happy his career had the path that did. He's a superstar of his own, believe me, and I respect him a great deal.
720 WGN, it's The Beat. Rich King with us, legendary sportscaster here in Chicago. Born and raised on the South Side, I know, but where at? Because I grew up at 113th in Ewing. Were you a little bit further north?
The South Side's kind of, it's inner South. You know?
Yeah.
17th and Racine, right around the Halstead Racine area, and I grew up there in Pilsen. And then we moved further south. We moved to 46th and Kedzie when I was in high school, senior year. And my mother, until she recently died, had lived there. She died in October. And that was, I guess that is the South Side. 46th and Kedzie is the South Side. De La Salle High School is the South Side. And UIC for college. So I never left Chicago. Grateful to stay in the city all the time and didn't have to go to Iowa or upper Wisconsin or anywhere to get back to Chicago. I was lucky enough to stay here all my career. And it worked out pretty good for 48 years.
Hey, Rich, when you were growing up, who was your favorite athlete in Chicago?
Oh, God, when I was growing up, sure, that's a long time ago. You're asking me? I grew up in the, being in 17th and Racine, you know, we could walk to Comiskey Park. So I was a big White Sox guy. And I grew up in the era where Sherman Lawler and Elnie Fox and Tim Rivera and Louis Aparicio played. So those guys are pretty much my heroes. I kind of patterned myself that Jim Landis was a fleet-footed center fielder who was a great ball player, could catch the ball with the best of them. And I played center field in American Legion ball until I was 20 years old. So I kind of, Landis was my hero. Sherman Lawler was a favorite. And all those guys, those are my guys I kind of, you know, grew up with.
So hold on a second, Rich. I mean, you've only been in the business for 48 years. You're not even 70 years old. I mean, clearly listening to you right now, I mean, there's no juice off the fastball. I mean, what are you going to do with yourself? Why not just keep going and going and going? Why give up the mothership here? WGN needs you. I need you.
Well, that's a great question, you know, and I got that from so many people. And I wrestled with this for the last 3 or 4 years. But basically, it came down to this. You know, when you get to be a certain age, you realize that life can be very short. I've had, unfortunately, a lot of people in my life who have died. I mean, my mother just passed away in October. My wife's sister died this past November. My late wife, Maggie, died 14 years ago now. And you begin to realize how short life is. And you see people who don't retire, and then when they do retire, they come up with an illness or a sickness, and they can't get around. I'm pretty strong for my age. I'm in good shape. I've been blessed with some great genes from my mother, who lived to be 98 years old. So, and financially, I'm secure. So it comes down to whether you want to continue working, which I love to do. I love working, most of it, not all of it, obviously. And or you want to take time off for my wife and your family and enjoy yourself and travel around a little bit. I think you can always try to go back to some degree if it doesn't work out. But if you wait too long and you work into your mid-70s or whatever, then you wind up getting sick, then you can't do, you can't. One person told me you're not able to walk up the pyramids. You're not able to walk up, in Ireland on the hills. If you think of Ireland, you don't want to be limping around. And that's basically was the decision I made. So it was a tough one, though, I'll be honest with you, because it's very hard to give up this profession sometimes because there is a lot of feedback to it and there's a lot of pizzazz to it. But there's also a downside. The downside is, and I don't think people realize this, is that there's very long hours. Jared Payton can tell you that. You can tell me that. Anybody can tell me that. That you're in there for a long time. You work weekends, you work 12-hour days, and you take road trips. So the long answer is, it was a pretty long answer, it was time. It was time to make the move.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around you walking from 17th and Racine to Comiskey Park. That's a 3-mile walk, Rich. And just to show you how far times have changed, that's an Uber ride now.
Hey, when you're a kid and you're going to a ball game, it's a short walk because you're excited all the way there. I couldn't wait to get through. You know, I grew up in an era, I'm dating myself, because there was television was black and white back then, all right? Keep that in mind. So you walk into the first time I walked in that ballpark, and I'm usually watching, you know, games on black and white. And I saw the green grass and the scoreboard, the red and the blue, and all the colors in the ballpark. It was like heaven. And so it's an easy walk.
Carm, that walk takes an hour. It takes an hour to walk.
I love what's going on right now. Go ahead, Jared.
No, it just to listen to Rich and to be around him, you know, a lot here at WGN-TV and learning from him. You know, one of the biggest conversations that we always have is talking about the Bears and going through the 85 rewind that we have on SportsBeat. I'm looking at old footage and listening to him, you know, cover the team and all this crazy stuff. But I want to ask you, Rich, what's the biggest or one of the greatest moments of covering that 1985 Chicago Bears team?
I think just being around the guys. Those guys were, you'll never see a group like that again. You had so many outspoken guys, McMahon, your dad was outspoken, and of course you had Dennis McKinnon, and you had McMichael, you had Hampton. Those guys were not only good players, they were very articulate and very outspoken, and they spoke their mind, and you had to cover them every day because if you missed a practice with late force, you'd miss something, and you couldn't shut the camera off Mike Ditka early because you might miss something great. So it was just being around that group of guys. You know, I see those guys now, and it always gives me the – in fact, it took April to we did the Super Bowl shuffle a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, whatever, and I covered it. I covered the remake. It was near North somewhere, and we went up there, and people were shocked because these guys were all hugging me and saying, why'd you marry this guy, and kidding around. So these guys were great guys. They were very, very easy to be around. Now, McMahon, when he played, it was tough sometimes. But now Jim has turned into a, you know, a pretty good friend. So it was a great group to be around. And, of course, Ditka was the main spokesman. So just that, just being around those guys. And, of course, the Super Bowl was amazing. I was there for that. And it was all just it was a fun time. And, Jared, I hate to say this because it's going to sound like, you know, the old guy talking, but you don't get that kind of fun these days around the Bears. I mean, that's the sad part about it. Everything's sort of business-like, and, yeah, there's a few people in the media joke around, but the players themselves, you can't get close to them. You can't get in their heads. You can't kid around too much with them because everything's so serious now.
There's not one person who covers the Bears who enjoys covering the Bears. That's just the truth of the matter right now. It is. You talk to seriously anybody out there, that's what you'd hear. Rich King, legendary broadcaster, WGN, retiring on June the 15th, 48 years in the business with us. We should keep you updated, too. The Broncos have just kicked a 52-yard field goal. They lead the Patriots 17-9. What athlete, if any, Rich, that when you look back on it, maybe that you were able to build the best connection with, you know, covering them, who kind of let you in a little bit and on the personal side?
Well, there was a bunch of them in the early days. Torrey La Russa and I were very good friends when he came out of the White Sox. And obviously Jerry Reinsdorf and I have become friends over the years. And I got to know Charlie Bach, who just recently passed away. And he was an analyst. I mean, you could – Jim Morrison, all those guys in the 80 Chicago White Sox teams. For a while, it was Dave Kingman. I got to know him, believe it or not. Jim Finks, very, very good with Jim. He was one of my confidants. So back then, you could know a lot of people, and you get close to them, and you were on a first name basis with them. Today, you know, it's very rough. I'm still friends with Jerry, obviously, but it's gotten through. There's a separation there between the athlete and the media that, as I think, it was a natural offshoot of the way things have gone in the media. Just a lot of media, these guys can get burned, so they keep to themselves pretty much.
Rich, you're one of those rare media members that has actually seen the fall of the Blackhawks and then see the dynasty get built back up, because when you started in the late 60s, you still had a lot of good players. Organization kind of goes dark, lost connection with fans, and they have come roaring back. How amazing has that story been, just from when you've started to where you are right now?
Well, it's a wonderful story because they were drawing 5,000 people there for a while, and it was just awful. And, you know, the advent of the new management, which is Rocky Wirtz and John McDonough, done an amazing job. And, of course, they drafted Kane and Taze, which helps. So, it's a great story. It's a great place to go now. I mean, it's exciting. The coach is great. I mean, everything in the organization turned around, it's wonderful to see. So, and it's going to continue for a long time because those guys are still pretty young, and obviously the coach isn't going anywhere. He wants to win some more. So it's a very pleasant picture to see. And I have the Cubs, too. I mean, the Cubs are on the threshold of a long run here. So it's going to be exciting. I'll be watching it from the sideline for the Cubs and the rest of it. But I've had so many great moments covering championship teams, the Bears and the White Sox bus in 05. It was – I've had a good run of covering a lot of interesting guys, a lot of interesting teams.
Rich, you talked about it, just about the Northsiders. I know you used to walk 19 miles on the south side of Comiskey, but to see what's going on the north side now, it's got to be pretty amazing. And did you think it would ever happen to see that this organization like the Cubs would be turning around like they have this past year?
Well, I'd say when I saw it happen, Jared, and then when they hired Theo, I thought he would bring him around, and he did. The guy gets a lot of credit. I mean, he's a smart man, and, you know, I like the White, but the Blackhawks, they're smart guys, and they're not old school. They're into the present age. They're into all the sabermetrics, which I don't care for, but obviously it works. So, yeah, I thought they'd shot that. Now they got to go out and do it, which is the hardest part. The pieces are in place. I thought the White Sox nicer the pieces in place. What would happen to them? In 05, nobody predicted the White Sox would win it. It's hard to win it. It's just hard. It's a long grind. It's a lot of breaks. You get injuries. Other teams come up and are better than you. And the Mets have helped themselves by signing Cespedes again. So all things considered, though, I felt they could do it once they had a deal. Before that, I was not too optimistic. But they're still not over the hump because they got now the hardest thing. They got to go out and do it.
Back in the day, Rich, you'd read the newspaper and then, you know, be able to go out and cover the beat, and maybe that would be, you know, you'd have an idea what you wanted to ask. Now you sit there with your phone, you read Twitter, and I mean, if you see anybody covering the Bulls or whoever, they're on their phone. They're not sitting there with the Sun-Times or the Tribune most times. Read it online, of course, but it's just completely different. I'm wondering, from your side of the world, do you think 10 years from now we're going to have the local sportscast? Because, you know, the reality is we live in a – you get it right now. No one's waiting till 10 o'clock at night, except, I DVR instant replay every single night or every single Sunday night. But it's changing so much. Do you think it will be there?
I don't think so. I think it's a great question. Thought about it a lot. And I think local sports will pretty much I'm not saying it'll disintegrate, but it'll be much – you know, look, I was telling my producer this yesterday. When I started back in 1990 at my second go-around at GMTV, I kept track of the ratings in the first year I was there, just for the heck of it every day. We were getting 9s, 10s, 6, 8, you know, 6.8. Now we're getting 1s, 2s, 3s. The audience is has been so diminished by the variety of things you can watch that, yeah, I think local sports is in danger. Computers taking over. I just joined Facebook last year, and no, I'm not watching television as much as I used to. So it eats you up, the computer. It takes your time, and it's obviously fun to do. I think people are getting most of their news from it right now. I think a lot of people are not watching the local news, because you can highlight, say, the Bears play a noon game. I mean, you can go on there at the computer, I'm sure, 3:30, whatever, during the game maybe get the highlights. So why wait around so in the evening? So you're right. It's a great question. I think it's good. The landscape will change drastically in the next 5 to 10 years.
Before we let you go, can you share maybe one of your favorite stories from Michael Jordan? Because, you know, through all the teams and all the personalities you've covered, Rich, I don't think there's one that's been as successful in the championship column, in dominance, in winning when it mattered than MJ, and you were around him all the time. Do you have a favorite story?
And feel free to give a really lengthy response. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy. Go ahead.
Well, I got a couple about Jordan. I'll say about Michael Jordan. When he started out, you would not believe a man of that talent and that the icon that he was could be so down to earth. I chatted with him when he was playing baseball. He was down in Sarasota in a locker room one day, and just like you and I are chatting now, most down to earth person you could ever meet. Talked about your life, how's the family doing, whatever. And the one player thing that I can remember is I covered a playoff game at Madison Square Garden, and I was down walking around getting my seat during the first quarter. I was doing some stuff on the air, and I got a bit there late. And I got there, I was under the Bulls, the Knicks basket, and there was a ball that, let me take a shot from the Bulls or whoever it was, and the ball bounced high in the air, and Jordan came running across the lane and by the key. I never saw a guy leap so high. And the whole building, this is Madison Square Garden, the whole building gasped. I never saw anything like it. They just gasped that this guy could get a rebound so high and so beautifully, so artistically, and scoop that ball up with one hand, race down the other end, and score. That's the kind of talent this guy was. He's the greatest basketball player I've ever seen, and was the greatest people I've ever been with. And he changed a little bit after the baseball thing, because I think he got a bit angry at the media because of the way they portrayed him as ruining the game. But he was just an outstanding person to be around. And again, Walter Payton, too. I mean, the guy was down to earth, kidding around, joking around. I told Jared the story. He used to goose you when you're interviewing somebody else, grab your butt from behind and just squeeze you. Now, keep in mind, this Walter Payton had hands like iron. I mean, I got home and my wife says, "What happened to your butt? It's all bruised." It was from Walter Payton. I mean, that's how strong he was. And I had a heck of a time explaining it to my wife, but it was Walter Payton.
I promise, honey, it was Walter. I promise.
That's unbelievable.
But I got to say this. You know, the one thing about my career, if people ask me what the most important element of my career was, and that's a question I anticipated, is nothing to do with sports. That's a career allowed me the ability to write two books. I wrote one about Maggie, and I wrote one about April. And in those books are really, I think, the most happy moments of my life were portrayed in those books, and that's the most meaningful thing. Those books helped a lot of people. They told the story of my life. My life's out there, 95% of it anyway, with both lives. and they were both great women. And that's what allowed me to, the career allowed me to do that, give me a platform to write those books. And that's the most thing I'm grateful for. The sports stuff was great. I enjoyed all of it. But the most meaningful thing are those two books.
Go to Amazon or wherever. My Maggie, you can pick it up. And Rich, hey, phenomenal career. Congratulations on all of it. And I know that you're going to stay active because, you know, you don't get to retire and go to the couch nowadays. You just get to do exactly what you want to do. So you've earned the right to enjoy yourself, sir. So go do it.
Well, thank you, guys. Remember, it's June 15th.
All right.
Take care.
Yep, yep. There he is, Rich King, retiring on June the 15th. 48 years in the business, which you're going to have, Sam Paniano, but you too, Jared.
Forgot to ask him where the best place to get a slice was. Should have asked him that.
We should have. We got to take a quick time out. We'll get you caught up to date on the Broncos and the Patriots and get you into news as well at the top of the hour. 720 WGN. They are at the half. The Broncos on top of the Patriots, 17-9. Tom Brady is awful so far in this game. He has got his quarterback rating 18, 9 for 20 with two picks. If anything, that would happen the other way.
JP, got to be able to run the rock, man. Got to be able to run it if you're going to be able to pass it.
We'll get full thoughts coming back, and also the man of the year being announced at halftime as well. We'll get you into the newsroom at the top of the hour. The big story, stuff going around the Chicago Police Department. Veronica Carter has that for you, 720 WGN.
Holy touchdown, baby!
Chicago Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The Beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN. Do, 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 do,
do, do, do. 720 WGN. Welcome back in. This is The Beat. I am Mark Harmon. You are Sam Panionovich. You are Jared Payton. Jared, who give the announcement? Who's the Walter Payton Man of the Year?
Wow. Well, let me just tell both of you guys real quick. Just sending out one tweet just does it. My Twitter account is going crazy right now. But congratulations to Anquan Boldin from the 49ers, Eli Manning from the Giants, and Benjamin Watson from the Saints. All three are very deserving of the award, and look forward to the NFL honors in the night and see who actually gets this award. This is always a great time of the year for my family and I. We get a chance to really sit down with these guys, have dinner with them and their families, talk with them. And then one thing that's kind of sweet about this is that these guys don't really get a chance to really sit down and talk with the commissioner or interact with them unless you're in trouble or something like that. So a lot of these guys, this is like a real cool time for them to sit down and talk with the commissioner about stuff that they have going on, and it's cool to watch everybody kind of interact. So I'm looking forward to going out west in a week or so. So
Benjamin Watson, tight end, the New Orleans Saints, tweeting out, so humbled to be named a finalist for the Walter Payton Man of the Year. Congrats to all the nominees. So many great men in our league. Was Eric Berry in consideration, Jared? One of my personal favorites.
Yeah, I think he was in consideration. I'm not really sure. My mom has the final vote. Connie Payton, a.k.a. Cope, she kind of decides. She gets a vote, and the NFL also votes as well. So you look at all these guys and their sheets of paper of all the stuff they're doing in the community. All of them are very deserving, but to see these three guys, they all have some type of compelling story, and I'm looking forward to kind of seeing, you know, who wins this. And I mean, last year we had Anquan Boldin was there last year, so I don't know. You never know how this thing kind of shapes out at the end.
You call your mom Cope?
That actually, when we were Jarrett, Harry, and Spike, Harry Tynowitz gave my mom Cope. That was her nickname, and so she goes with it now. That's like her, if you call her Connie, she'll get upset, and she'll be like, just call me Cope. I'm like, all right, that's your new hashtag. So she doesn't want a Twitter account, she wants a hashtag.
Well, speaking of Twitter accounts, and you brought up that your Twitter's on fire, the entire Payton family has a Twitter account, and your unborn daughter has a Twitter account with 122 followers. 132 followers, I'm sorry. I don't know how this happens.
Yeah, she's getting some traction right now. I think once she gets here on April 17th or so, she'll probably have at least about 500. So we're looking forward to that. But yeah, it's pretty cool, man. This is a great opportunity. And who would have ever thought that, you know, this would, in 1999, when they renamed it, that it would blow up to be this big. And now we have Nationwide as a sponsor. It's gotten bigger and bigger every single year.
17-12, the Broncos now all over, should not, that's, let me rephrase, 17-12, getting tighter, the Broncos and the Patriots, 10:26 to go in the third quarter as we keep you up to date. And, of course, a little bit later tonight, the Cardinals and the Panthers. Blackhawks hockey coming up on this very station at 5:30. Blackhawks and the Blues, 5:30 pregame.
A lot of skin in this game, too. Did you guys see the numbers that in Vegas, and this is only in Vegas and the sports books, $1.4 million bet on this game between the Patriots and the Broncos.
Is that all?
And of that $1.4 million, almost $1 million on New England. So, and we're not even counting the offshore markets and the local guys on the corner. This is a big one.
Panionovichbooking.com.
No, I'm just, I mean, these are all readily available online. David Purdom with the facts. But, I mean, I can only imagine it's hundreds of million dollars. And the Super Bowl, as we know, people are betting on the color of the Gatorade and, you know, how long is the national anthem. It's a crazy market, and it's watched by so many.
Jarrett, who do you got in the Super Bowl right now? Go all out on the Peyton limb.
Well, I really thought that if Denver could really control this game, that they would win. I'm going to go with Denver, and I'm going to go with the Panthers. It's hard not to go with the quarterback I kind of look at Cam Newton and see what he's done at such a young age. Man, he's gotten so much better, and he's leading a team, and he's doing it with not as many resources on the offensive side, except for, you know, Greg Olsen. So, but I think at the end, I think the Panthers win the whole thing.
Fair enough. All right, so when we come back here, we just talked about the Walter Payton Man of the Year. We're going to talk about perhaps doing something that would not fall under the Man of the Year, and that's what's going on in Cleveland. And by the way, congrats to the Bulls on getting a win last night over the Cavs. The record-breaking Hawks are flying high. Tonight they face off against division rival St. Louis, Blackhawks and the Blues. Tonight at 6, you can watch it on WGN-TV. Quick timeout, celebrate a Bulls win, and I know that Sam's got deep thoughts on what happened to his guy, David Blatt, and LeBron having too much control. We'll do that next. 720 WGN.
The only time it's a coach's league is when you lose. It's a player's league when you win, and players make the difference. Coaching's important. It's vital that you have competent coaching. But the difference between winning and losing in playoff series comes down to who has the better team, who has the better roster, and I think Cleveland has a chance because they're clearly the best roster in the East.
There you go, Jeff Van Gundy, weighing in on the David Blatt firing. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Jarrett Payton. He's Sam Panionovich. This is The Beat, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. A lot of people having problems with LeBron James throwing his power around and saying that stuff like players should play and coaches should coach and GMs should GM and owners should have it all in line. Sam, where are you coming out of this? Because let me just throw my opinion out real quick. And we talked about this yesterday briefly. The CEO, listen, if you're a salesperson at your company and you're the highest salesperson, you get a lot of power. If you're the most popular on-air guy at a radio station, you have power. You get the point. The best carpenter is going to have power in his company. It doesn't matter where you are. You're going to have a little extra juice. So LeBron being able to dictate who the coach is, I don't think anybody should really have a problem with that, because that's how the world works, and you got to be in relation with your top guy. It goes back a long, long, long way in the history of the league, and not just the NBA, but, you know, it's across sports.
But nobody's taken this to the level that LeBron has taken it to because of his popularity. I mean, this is a guy that it's not even really arguable who's more popular in their primes, LeBron or Jordan, because just the amount of people, the amount of reach that LeBron has, it's way greater than Jordan ever had, because there are more avenues to get to LeBron. We can go to his Twitter or his Facebook, or we could download the LeBron app and watching him throw his kids in the pool and be at the barbershop. I mean, this guy is everywhere. He is shoved down our throats. He decides a lot of things with that team, though. Jarrett, I mean, he wanted to trade Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love. Probably not the right move long term. He wanted Tristan Thompson to be paid. He wanted David Blatt out. Didn't like David Blatt's style. So he gets everything he wants, and I think that's what makes people upset.
I mean, it does, but in the grand scheme of things, at the end, it really comes down to when he does make those decisions or he does throw his weight around, is it helping him out? Is it helping him be successful?
Is it making the team better? Is the team better? I don't know.
I don't know either, but he's going to, I mean, it's all going to fall on him. And I think that's the one thing that he can do, that he has the right calm, like you were talking about, to be able to throw his weight around and make decisions. But in the end, it really comes down to how many championships does he win, and he's still not anywhere close to where the greatest of them all is. So he's still fighting. I feel like he fights with that every single day. Don't you guys think?
Well, the problem that I have with it is that he's just not honest about it. Like, when he came, Adrian Wojnarowski has an incredible piece on it, and it basically says that when LeBron went there, it was already in play that he was going to bring in Mark Jackson to be the head coach. That was a done deal, that Mark Jackson was going to, that Blatt was going to get moved out and Jackson would come in. But the Cavs knew too much about how Jackson comported himself in Golden State, and they weren't going to do that. So this whole time, behind the scenes, LeBron apparently has been hammering away at Blatt and not in his corner. And eventually, when he realized he couldn't get Mark Jackson, he said, all right, fine, give me Tyronn Lue. If that was the case, listen, from my perspective, like, they're a year and a half behind. If he didn't want Blatt to be the coach, they should have fired him the day he got there. Listen, hey, David, sorry, but you're going to be in an untenable position. He does not want to play for you, and we don't want to have a year and a half of growth with a coach and then just throw it out the window, because at some point this is going to go sour. Right? I mean, does that almost make more sense?
It does, to an extent, but here's my thing.
Or if you're not going to do that, you can't fire him now. They're in the first place in the East.
No, I know, but I mean, like LeBron, okay? Like, and they say, the reports out of Cleveland are that LeBron found out after it happened. I don't buy that for a second. He was in on that decision. It was probably one of the most majoritative stances. But after the game, Tyronn Lue's first game, they lose to the Bulls, a division rival. The game wasn't really all that good. You know, it was an ugly game. And after the game, you know, LeBron takes to Instagram and posts a picture of him all dude'd up, and it says, smile, preppy, life is great. And then he hashtags live, laugh, love. And then he hashtags strive for greatness. And it's like, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of turmoil. And it's like, it just, I don't know. To me, it seems like sometimes winning isn't the most important thing for him. I just feel that way.
He should have thrown in a hashtag rise and grind.
Hashtag live, laugh, love. What are you, a sorority girl? Come on.
I love
Come
it.
On.
I love it when, Sam, I love it when you get juiced up like
I'm
this,
just,
man.
I mean, you just really lost on national television to the Bulls, and, you know, I don't know. That's just me.
Well, he's feeling the heat.
Hold up.
Yeah, go ahead, JP.
Real quick, because,
Take your
Sam,
time.
I get where you're coming from, because nowadays, when you talked about everything you just talked about, from we're able to, these guys are more accessible than they have been ever in the world of sports now. So now it's not really about, it's more about your brand. They're
right,
more
right, right.
worried about their brand and people buying their shoes and everything that they have to make more money than it is really about winning. I think winning has become kind of second fiddle to where the brand is now.
Well, hold on. I look at LeBron as obsessed to win in Cleveland. He's working out like a complete lunatic in the off season. I mean, this guy's not mailing it in on any level. Now, did he comport himself in a way that you would recommend to somebody around his head coach? Probably not, but okay. I mean, I that doesn't mean he doesn't want – I don't think he's more concerned about selling shoes than bringing a championship to Cleveland. I don't think that's fair. I don't see that either. I mean, not that he doesn't want to do both. Cake and eat it too, I get that. But, I mean, you don't think that he doesn't want to win, do you?
No, I wouldn't say that, but I just think that if he loses – he's, you know, whatever. He's got a great house, got a beautiful wife, got great kids, a lot of support, a lot of friends, and I think he's okay with that. Where a lot of players in the past were in the gym until they got it right.
But
I don't think that it's that he's. I shouldn't have said that. Now I want to go back. I just don't think that when you look at some of the greats to ever play the game of basketball, and since we're in Chicago, let's talk about Michael Jordan. The way that losing felt to him, like he couldn't stand it. I just don't know if that's the same burn
right.
that LeBron James gets as like Michael did. And I'm not trying to compare him. I just, it's different, and I know it's a different day and age now.
Well, okay, but I think we can all agree that to get to the level that LeBron has gotten to, you have to be, I mean, of singular focus. There's no way that you get to the best player in the game right now by far, and I love Steph Curry and whatever. Kevin Durant's great, and Kawhi Leonard's a great two-way player too, whatever, it doesn't matter. I mean, this guy is top 10 all time. You don't get to that by, you know, mailing it in. And he's also, the other thing about LeBron, and 312-981-7200, it's sort of this question I asked yesterday about Rose, why do you hate LeBron? I mean, this guy, he came right out of high school and has comported himself in as professional a manner as you can. He always talks to the media before games. Superstars don't do that. He does. He's incredibly supportive of his teammates. Now, this latest thing with Blatt, okay, not ideal, but listen, Magic Johnson got Paul Westphal fired in L.A. What did Michael feel about Doug Collins at the time? That wasn't Michael's job, but clearly that was from upper management. But the point is that a lot of superstars have had moments with their coach. I don't think you can indict the guy for that. I support LeBron a ton. I think, listen, he's never done anything wrong off the court. I mean, how can – are you guys – are you with me?
It has nothing to do with – yeah, but it isn't – it's not – I don't think that's where Sam and I are coming from. It's not that he has. He's been a model citizen. He's done everything he needs to.
I'm looking at basketball. Basketball only on the floor.
And what are you saying?
I just think he's a little too passive, and then, you know, it's always, well, I didn't have enough help. You know, we heard that in Miami. They didn't have enough help, so he needed another Hall of Famer, and Pat Riley threw the fishing rod in the water and brought Ray Allen in to play with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. I mean, come on, dude. Like, you're the best player in the game. Show me something.
Well, but hold up. He did go down there to win a championship, and how he handled that was not great. But he also chose to come back to Cleveland, right?
Right, because the roster was getting old, and Mike Miller and Shane Battier were in wheelchairs.
Right, but he didn't – I mean, that wasn't necessary. He could have gone to a better team than the Cavs. I mean, he took a lot on going back home, right?
The Cavs are the best team ever, Jarrett, to fire their coach midseason. Did you know that?
Not yet, dude. It was kind of shocking when I heard it. But
they were
first place. But the first thing I thought was that LeBron was behind it.
Right.
Some of it. I mean, that's the first thing that came to mind.
Okay. I mean, I'm not denying that at all. And, again, I think they should have – if this was the way that he felt about Blatt, they should have gotten rid of him right when he got there. Why waste –
if you wanted to fire him after he didn't want to give you the ball in game four, or after he almost called that timeout they didn't have.
Right, after he hit the three from the corner when Sam and I were hosting the show on a Sunday and I basically was incapacitated for the final hour of the show, they should have just fired him right then.
Yep.
All right, the world-famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section on WGNradio.com. This year, Chicago is captured in black and white. It's presented in a special one-of-a-kind way in the 2016 2K's calendar. This is the eighth year for these highly sought-after calendars. It's the first year it's all black and white. Not only does it feature Chicago landmarks, seen through the lens of spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted with your name seamlessly blended in. You can see Sam Panionovich seamlessly blended in.
On Wrigley?
All over the place. You'll enjoy a view of Chicago that will change the way you look at the city forever. These black and white calendars add a whole new level of class and elegance. Give a gift that's completely 100% original. Go to WGNradio.com, scroll down to the feature section, make a purchase of our calendar, and a portion of the proceeds benefit JDRF. To make 2016 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar. The 2K's calendar, available in the feature section at WGNradio.com. Get you the big story coming up next. A little controversy in the Chicago Police Department. 720 WGN.
What can I get you today, Smoke a Lot?
Lovely. Let me get a pound of your Swedish chiba.
Damn. Yes. Some told me to bring a lot of weed, man. Pound of my Swedish chiba. Don't get no better than that.
Slam through the bag, baby.
That's gonna be $9,600, bro.
See what I got here. Come on, man, hang out for a minute and smoke with me. I got weed, got my bong out. Come on, son.
Oh, yeah. Little late night flavor, a little chill flavor on the beat.
Of course, that's from Half Baked.
Great movie. Never saw it, but really like that clip.
Some of our audience is wondering what is going on right now.
Well, it's one of the biggest stories of the week. Right, Jarrett?
And I'm trying to get over the Half Baked clip because that's one of my favorite parts of the movie. It's hilarious.
Well, we like to promote when athletes, you know, do well both on and off the field. And Chicago fans may remember Cliff Robinson from his NBA days, mainly from the Michael Jordan 6-3-pointer game one of the 1992 NBA Finals.
He was the guy on the Trailblazers, about 6'9", wore number 3, always had a headband on. His fingertips were so close to blocking like 3 of Michael Jordan's 6 made threes in game one of the 92 Finals.
But now his fingertips have a different smell. Long time Portland Trailblazer. I love how this story reads. Cliff Robinson now blazing a trail for the use of marijuana.
Uncle Spliffy.
Uncle Spliffy for medical treatment for athletes. 49 years old now, Uncle Spliffy, back in Portland, and he's promoting the cannabis, and he's a featured speaker at the Cannabis Collaborative Conference. Jared and Sam and Mike Jacobson, that'll be February the 3rd and 4th. I am going to Jimmy DeCastro to see if we could be perhaps in attendance to cover it for WGN, because a lot of news is going to be made. Robinson telling KOIN6 News, "I think I've always been an advocate for cannabis. It's calming."
I think? He thinks he has. Okay.
"It's calming. It calms my stomach. It calms my nerves. So from that standpoint, I see a lot of positives." The old calm stomach advocate.
Well, and he's going to make a lot of money on this. Oregon legalized recreational use of pot in July. One of 4 states to do that. Plus, the District of Columbia has also done it. So beginning in October of this year, recreational pot can be purchased from dispensaries and retail stores. So it's going to be out there.
And get a pan of your Swedish chiba.
Right. And maybe Uncle Spliffy is in the store, you know, tightening one up. I mean, and it's great because he's going to make a lot of money. And I appreciate good business.
Well, it's a very simple question to you also at 312-981-7200, because at some point in the state of Illinois, we will have the same rules as the state of Oregon. We will figure out that the money is there to be made, and we'll also figure out that the old wacky tobacco is on equal footing with the alcohol that we drink every single day. Of course, so at some point, I think we'll have the same situation. And give me a nice Chicago athlete, perhaps, that could fall under the Cliff Robinson umbrella.
Oh, I've got a couple of names, but I'm not going there.
Well, give me somebody.
No.
Back in the day?
Can't do it. I can give you one right now, but I'm not doing it.
No, all right, well,
can't
I mean,
do it.
Okay, well, you guys always play this political correct game. I'll go there.
Okay, you go first and second and third.
Well, let's. Okay, well, here, back in.
Careful.
Sure you want to do this?
Careful.
Not 100% certain, no. But I guess I can leave it a little broader as I think of the perfect target for this, which apparently I should have done ahead of the time. But regardless, if an athlete opens up the marijuana dispensary, aren't you more likely to go there than to the standard spot? Like, I would rather – I think yes. Cliffy is going to have an edge in his business because he's Cliff Robinson, right?
But also too, with marketing, I mean, can't you just see him now with maybe a headband and just the marijuana leaf on the headband, just him come to Uncle Spliffy's, you know, make sure you're okay.
Right.
I mean, make sure your stomach feels better.
Right. If you go there, you might get a chance to chill with Uncle Spliffy, talk hoop, and get yourself, you know, whatever you need.
Cliff Robinson played 19 years in the NBA.
89 to 2006.
Career salary game, Cliff Robinson. What do you got, JP? How much money did Uncle Spliffy make in the NBA? In 19 years, total salary.
$100 million?
I'm going to say less than that.
Lower than that.
60?
$61.5 million.
See?
Uncle Spliffy.
Good money.
That's a great guess by you. You said 60.
And the guy's trying to leverage that dough into another great business. 630 texting, and I'm smoking right now, getting ready for the Hawks and listening to you folks.
Nice.
Congratulations. Way to enjoy your afternoon.
Honesty is the best policy.
Snap, I want to know bag, if you baby. Sound better.
I mean, that is.
So this is going to happen. You're right. I mean, the guys with money are going to be the people, and if he saved his money, which I hope he has.
Well, he couldn't open up the dispensary without the dough, right?
A lot of cash in this racket.
Cliffy, I'm sorry, Uncle Spliffy says that when he was in the league, he did smoke it. And he says, when I did it, it was wrong. I paid the penalty. But now we're in a new time.
You know better than that.
Now we're in a new time, and we're trying to move forward. I mean, Uncle Spliffy is moving it forward. I respect that. I respect it big time. Hey, man, like, you don't just, like, you know, end of the day, make a – like, look at – I mean, guys who become businessmen like Magic Johnson, Starbucks, movie theaters, buying the Dodgers, you don't just sit on the couch when you're done playing at 40 years old with all your dough. You got to find something that excites you or relaxes you in this case. And I appreciate the fact that Uncle Spliffy's taking it to the next level.
And there have been stories coming out from all different outlets over the years about veterans, especially that played in the NFL. And we know about the health of those players who were in the trenches, especially offensive and defensive linemen, running backs. A lot of those athletes, to this day, I'm sure if you ask some of the old Bear players, a lot of them, because of the medical, you know, reachability that they can get it, they do it because it does absolve them of pain.
Releasing names of people who I know. That's kind of the biggest thing when you start to look down at some of the effects of that you deal with. And I think a lot of guys, even while they're playing, trying to figure out of how to manage some of the pain that comes with playing the game. And you start taking a lot of these pain medications to deal with the pain, and that's not good for you. So this is another way for them to be able to deal with all the pain that they're going through, well, especially the guys after they get done playing.
Public service announcement from 720 WGN, the beat, actually make it just strictly for me. I don't think the station necessarily would support what I'm about to say. Chandler Jones of the New England Patriots was smoking the synthetic last week and ended up with his shirt off, stumbling around town and showing up at the police station hallucinating. And of course, the Patriots had him playing on Sunday because he's a very good football player, and who really cares what you're doing off the field? He's smoking synthetic because you can't get tested for it. But that stuff is way more lethal.
He should lethal?
Yes, it's making him hallucinate.
It's like chemicals.
Right.
It's like all the different crazy chemicals built in there.
Isn't lethal deadly?
Well, you're talking about a guy who's walking down the street with his shirt off, doesn't know where he's at, completely disoriented. I mean, bad things can happen in that state. I'm saying that he should stick with Uncle Spliffy and keep it natural, and his life would be better. Right?
By the way,
there's a lot of guys at the NFL right now who are taking to the synthetic, and that is dangerous for real.
Who was the former corner? He played for Seattle. He got caught for marijuana, and then they had to get rid of him, and he went to New England. Brandon Browner. He was a guy in the NFL that got popped a couple of times, and I think if you go back and look at some of that stuff, I mean, that was one of the first guys, JP, in the Legion of Boom, you know, where they would play all out, get the job done on Sunday, but they would lead with their helmets and lead with their shoulders. And I'm sure you had a lot of, you know, muscle pulls and neck pain. And I mean, a lot of those guys, if you look between the fine print, it was pain relief.
Yeah. And look,
I just want to know one thing. Whoever texted us on the text line, I want to know if we sound better while he's at home right now enjoying himself. I mean, do we sound better?
He didn't say that, but he did say that the doctor said he needed a bacalotomy, which I don't believe that's
a
bacchiotomy. Right. There we go. Thank you very much. Sorry. I think he spelled it wrong, or I can't read one of the two. And that doesn't sound like a real disease, but perhaps it's something that you ever had one of those there?
No,
Sam?
Not yet.
No bacchiotomies?
Not yet.
Al Chapo is texting and saying it's great. I'll make a lot of money. WGN's cool stance on drug dealers. Well, hold on a second. It's legal out
entirely
there.
Entirely true.
This is a. It's not like he's doing this undercover. This is the policy in the state of Oregon and Colorado. And don't think it's not going to be universal at some point.
By the way, I think the Denver Broncos just put in a field goal, 20-12 now, the lead over the Patriots in the AFC title game.
One more comment from Uncle Spliffy before we move along. He says, I think we definitely have to continue looking into cannabis and the benefits that it has, the health benefits it has, because I think it's come leaps and bounds. And once again, the Cannabis Collaborative Conference, February 3rd and 4th at the Expo Center. Cliff Robinson's keynote speech will be on February the 4th.
Jarrett, we got a text back from the 630. He said that we all sound incredibly good-looking.
No, that's good. At least it's the effects that make us sound good looking. I like that.
And
this last text, you should read this last one.
Says, Carm, some spiffy could have gone a long way in calming the angry ex-Bears in studio this season. I don't know if Hampo, B, and Kaz are going down that road, but you have a point, sir.
Well, you know about that more than we do.
Hey, I don't want to calm those guys down, so I'm glad that Uncle Spiffy hasn't quite gotten to the Hamp OB and Causer. All right, 312-981-7200. You want to jump in on the program? We do have actually my favorite story from sports this week coming back here. a great tribute to a phenomenal athlete who misspoke, and we have the audio.
It's great.
It's fantastic. The Chicago Auto Show takes place over at McCormick Place from Saturday, February the 13th, from Sunday, February 21st. Fifth Third Bank is the exclusive bank of the Chicago Auto Show and your destination for discount coupons for opening weekend or weekday admission. Stop into any Fifth Third Bank today, pick up your discount coupons, and when you're at the Auto Show, be sure to visit the Fifth Third Bank exhibit and tell them your friends at WGN Radio told you to stop by and say hello. Fifth Third Bank member FDIC, the best story in sports, a little misspeak coming up next, and then we'll have Kendall Gill right after the 5 o'clock news. 720 WGN. Having some fun here, 720 WGN. It is the beat, and it did get a little sweaty down in Australia. I know you're all watching the Australian Open. I am nothing if not your home for tennis talk. I know you guys are excited about this. Right, Sam? Right, Jared?
Right. I actually am, because oftentimes it's not the performance, you know, on the surface. It's what happens after, and this is another case of that. The fireworks post-match that kind of, I guess, steam from tennis from time to time.
Yeah, so, Jared, have you ever been to the U.S. Open or any tennis tournament?
No, not at all. But I've watched, watched it on TV, but no, never had a chance to. And but I love tennis. I get all my information from you on Twitter. So
God bless you. Thank you for that. At the Carm, by the way, follow me. I give you mentions on the show and send you gifts.
And he tells you that he loves you.
At the Carm. It's really an outstanding follow. So after a match, if you go to it, there's on every single match, there will be a reporter that comes out and interviews the player that won. And who's ever hanging around in the stadium will, you know, get to hear his or her thoughts. So Daria Gavrilova was having a phenomenal tournament down here, the Australian Open, the first major of the year. She beat Petra Kvitova, who's a two-time Wimbledon champion. And she also had a win over Kristina Malandovic, one of those two.
That sounds like a Serbian name. You got to get that right.
I'm still getting more familiar with Kristina.
Lots of vowels there.
But so she's here. She is, and she's she had. It was an incredible match. She comes back in third set, wins it 11-9. Came from a little bit had to have a comeback to get there, and then we got this piece of beauty from her.
Yeah, what do you tell yourself when you got down, though, and having to serve to stay in the match? What do you tell yourself differently?
Because I know if I don't win this game, I'm done. So I just, I'm good from behind.
Not going to go there. Come here. Come back here. You're still young.
So this is a 19-year-old girl who immediately reacted when she said, "I'm good from behind."
Well, the crowd is to blame there. Did you hear the...
No, she said it, and then more so than just saying it, she reacted knowing exactly what she had just said.
Ah.
Can I get that one more time, Jacobson, just for effect here? You like that,
what
JP?
What do you tell yourself when you got down, though, and having to serve to stay in the match? What do you tell yourself differently?
Because I know if I don't win this game, I'm done. So I just, I'm good from behind.
Not going to go there. Come here. Come back here. You're still young.
Now, that's a professional interviewer right there. I'm not going to go there. You're still young.
Yes.
Jared Payton, thoughts? Daria Gavrilova.
Well, it's tough. I mean, anytime that you get a chance to, have, mics right after you're done playing, and you're going through, a battle of trying to win an event or a game, and sometimes when you react, especially when you see tennis crowds react, you just got to keep it going, keep it moving. And she is young, and shame on everybody in the audience for just like gasping and laughing about it. Come on now.
There is that cool off period, though, in most sports. I mean, it's 15, 20 minutes after the match, after the game or the event is over. Aside from, maybe they get the best player from the basketball game or the football game, like the quarterback usually talks. But this is, like you said, Jared, this is the heat of the emotion, and they don't really have much time to process these thoughts. And sometimes you get stuff that's raw and uncut. And she didn't say anything bad. I mean, she didn't drop a bunch of cuss words or anything. But, you know, maybe if she had more time to settle into her thoughts, she probably wouldn't have said that.
No, it wasn't the best choice of words, but God love her. She's the best. And
she's honest.
Well, I don't. She just kind of, you know, got a little.
Are you saying she enabled?
No. Are you talking about the reporter?
Yes.
Oh, I see. The reporter's in a no-win situation. There's nothing you could say. I suppose you just move on quickly.
Not going to go there. Come here. Come back here. You're still young.
By the way, Kristina Mladenovic is, she's of Serbian and Bosnian descent.
Well, and then Daria just had a very rough loss, apparently, and had as we move the story forward, that was from 2 days ago. Now she just lost and is out of the tournament and had a meltdown, right, Sam?
Yeah, this is according to the New Zealand Herald. Daria Gavrilova throws epic tantrum, then breaks hearts with apology. So she has since lost, and I guess we have more antics after the match.
It's not easy being on the court by yourself.
Hey,
yes?
Hey, listen,
yes?
Hey, get over here. I'm not going to go there. You're too young.
See, you're a budding media superstar. For listening to the Daria Gavrilova story, we want to hook you up with a fine and outstanding WGN prize. What are we giving away here? A little of the auto show, Mike Jacobson? All right. We got a pair of tickets for you to the Chicago Auto Show, February 13th through the 21st. It's at McCormick Place. It's courtesy of Fifth Third Bank, member FDIC, and the exclusive bank of the show. We've got we've got two pairs of tickets available for you. Let's go caller 7 and caller 8, and we want your deep tennis thoughts, too, when you call in. But Mike Jacobson probably will just take your name if you're caller 7 and caller 8. 312-981-7200. That is the phone number. When we come back, we'll update you on the Broncos and the Patriots, and then Kendall Gill will be with us right after 5 o'clock.
The Denver Police Department is criticizing Tom Brady. We'll tell you why.
Wow. 720 WGN.
Really proud of how the guys came out and responded. I thought our defensive intensity right from the jump was exactly where we needed it to be in order to come out here and compete. And, you know, we rebounded the ball well. We did a good job guarding the three, which you have to do against this team. They were, I think, 4-for-24 for the game. And had good pace at times and not so good pace at times, but you know, it's kind of the way that the game was going. So just really happy with how the guys came out of the locker room tonight.
Fred Hoiberg generating excitement. Bulls a winner over the Cavs last night as they continue to play well against the best teams in the league, minus the performance against Golden State earlier in the week. I'm Mark Harmon. He is Sam Panionovich. Pleased to be joined right now by former Chicago Bull, the Flying Illini, of course, as well, and now back on Comcast Sportsnet, which is awesome. Kendall Gill taking some time out of his Sunday to join us on WGN. Kendall, all season long, the conversation's been about energy. And if you look around the league, quotes from a lot of teams that don't win, you see energy, energy, energy. How do you, because I think it's more than that, I guess. How do you break down when they kind of put it under that energy umbrella?
Well, I'm a guy that really doesn't buy into the energy concept. I'm all about execution. I mean, if you execute, you're going to have the energy naturally. You know, you got to go out there with a game plan. You got to execute the game plan. And, you know, when guys talk about energy, they really don't have a game plan. You know, sometimes you can have guys that come off the bench that'll give you a boost, but energy only lasts for so long. You got to have a plan and you got to execute.
Kendall, when you look at Derrick Rose's game and where he's at right now, and I guess, you know, I was a critic of him in the first couple of months of the season. I thought he shot too much. Even if he had double vision, he was still shooting too much, and I stand by that. But now he seems to be a little more comfortable. He's getting to the hole. He's creating. And it was funny. I had this argument after the game the other night against Golden State. He had 29 points and 2 assists, and this guy was grilling Rose for only having 2 dimes. And I said, he probably should have had 12. I mean, guys weren't making shots.
Well, yeah. I mean, when guys don't make shots, you have a tendency, if you're as talented as Derrick Rose, to go ahead and take it upon yourself to score baskets. And now, you know, Derrick naturally is a point guard. His first inclination is to pass first and shoot second. However, he's so talented that he has the ability to take over scoring when he's healthy at any time. You know, you mentioned that, you know, you were critical of him in the first couple of months. Well, I interviewed Derek, I believe that was last Monday, and he said, listen, you know, it's all a process for me, step by step by step. And, you know, now I'm happy where I am. I'm starting to come out of it. You know, and I've always said this too, you know, listen, Batman is starting to come out of the cave now. He was asleep for a while, but now he's starting to come out, and you're starting to see glimpses of the old Derrick Rose. I don't say that he's 100% back right now. However, I think that you're starting to see some signs of the old Derrick coming back. And, you know, his mental approach to the game the other day when I interviewed him, which, I mean, I was very, very impressed with.
So, I mean, listen, he's had three knee surgeries. He had the mass to start the year, which any player, especially a guard who's trying to hit, you know, mid-range jumpers and threes, they're impacted by wearing something like that. And he hasn't been on the court, you know, getting back to the injuries. I don't think he can get back to where he was, Kendall, you know, MVP style. But people who are writing him off as a player in this league, I just think they're just dead wrong. Okay, he may get hurt again, okay, but he may not, too. And if he doesn't, I think that there's plenty of talent in him to be a very productive player.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are dead wrong as well because, you know, listen, Derrick Rose, before he got injured, was probably, if he could have stayed healthy, might have gone down as one of the best point guards to ever do it. I mean, athletically, I thought that he was right there. Now, do I think he'll get back to the MVP level? Maybe not. However, I do think he can become an all-star. You see him time after time when he plays against the elite point guards in the league, the Steph Currys, the Russell Westbrooks. He brings his game, and, you know, he plays at a high level. Last night, not so much against Kyrie Irving. However, you know, he was instrumental in the win because of the way he drew the defense and the way he dished off to his teammates. So he's doing what's necessary. And, you know, I think that Derrick is going to make the All-Star team next year, the way that his mental outlook is, the way that his game has started to come around. I think, and he told me, listen, I'm not setting personal goals this season. I'm going to set my personal goals once again next season. I think he's just trying to get through this season healthy.
The league just lost a lifer, Johnny Bock, at age 91, and you had two stints with Johnny, once in Charlotte, and then you caught him on the back end in Chicago. I love when all the stories come out, you know, things that maybe I didn't know before. The Ace of Spades card, the card of death that he would bust out. He had a big impact on you, of course, you know, great defensive mind. Do you have any favorite stories that you can share with us about Johnny Bock?
Yeah, Johnny Bock used to always tell us, I don't care how rough the seas are, bring the ship in. So we're in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it snows. It rarely snows in Charlotte. Maybe once in 5 years it does. So it happened to snow that day, and we had practice. He couldn't make it to practice, okay, because he was snowed in Charlotte. So we call him up at his apartment from the practice facility and say, listen, I don't care how rough the seas are, bring the ship in. He never, ever let me forget that day when he couldn't make it to practice, whenever I was seeing him.
Johnny Bock, phenomenal. I could tell a story about it before the end of the show tonight. But I want to ask Kendall about what's going on in Cleveland. We've been talking some David Blatt, Kendall, as you can imagine. What's your take on LeBron having influence? Should he not? And I don't care if he knew or didn't know. I obviously assume that he did. I mean, that would be crazy if he didn't. What's your take?
Well, you know, anytime you make moves like firing a coach, you definitely let your top players know. I mean, that's been my experience in the in my career. Whenever coaches were about to be fired, I always kind of knew, you know, the GM would come in and talk to you about it. And, you know, it's hard for me to believe that LeBron didn't know, you know, because, of course, you know, that's LeBron James. He's probably one of the faces of the NBA now, he and Steph Curry, and, you know, the face of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So it's hard for him not to be in the loop about what's going on about managerial decisions.
When I just look at those two next to each other, though, Tyronn Lue and LeBron James, I'm wondering how Tyronn Lue's going to tell LeBron James what to do. And then LeBron looks down and, you know, he's got a foot on him and 100 pounds. The dynamic of it is just interesting to me.
Well, no, Ty Lue is a tough guy. You know, from my playing days against him, I always knew him to be a stand-up guy or a guy who always told it like it was. And from my understanding in some of the film sessions with the Cleveland Cavaliers, after Coach Blatt would go through the film session and not point out the mistakes LeBron would be making on the court, Ty Lue would go back and point out LeBron's mistake. So he's that type of guy. I don't think he's afraid to speak his mind. I don't think that he'll hold back when it comes to disciplining or correcting LeBron. I know him as a guy of strong character and a guy that's not going back down.
He also was the one that saved Blatt's lunch in the playoffs when Blatt was trying to call the timeout.
That's
and
true.
Lou was like, hey, we don't have any.
Right, exactly. Hey, listen, he was a point guard in the league, very capable, played on some very good teams, paid his dues, was interviewed actually before Blatt was for the job in Cleveland. You know, now it seems like they have the guy that they want.
Kendall Gill with us, former Chicago Bull, the Flying Illini, of course, now with Comcast Sportsnet. And I want to know, as by the way, the Patriots are about to lose and the Broncos are going to advance to the Super Bowl, fourth down, incomplete in a attempt to Gronk.
Got three timeouts in the two-minute warning.
Gronk is going crazy right now. Right?
Yeah, Gronk is out of his mind. Yeah, well, they've got three timeouts and they got the two-minute warning, so first down and it's over.
And we appreciate you taking time during the football here, Kendall. I know you're probably interested in that as well. But hey, what do you do if you're Fred Hoiberg? I don't think there's any easy options, but I'm curious what you would do at the three. I mean, Tony Snell, one good game out of however many, and Doug McDermott still looks to me scared to be on the court at times, like doesn't feel like he belongs. And Nico has been super up and down. What would you do at that spot?
Well, if I'm trying to go for it now, I make a trade. You know, I know that Tony Snell has had some games where he's looked spectacular. I know that McDermott is coming off an injury and does have a nice shot. But if we're trying to go for it now, I try to make a trade for a legit small forward with some championship experience, perhaps Trevor Ariza in Houston, maybe a Rudy Gay in Sacramento, somebody like that with consistent scoring ability that can play defense on both ends, because you know you're going to have to guard LeBron James. So that's the way that I would go.
Last thing, Kendall, we appreciate your time here with us on The Beat on WGN Radio. I still see Stephen Bardo from time to time, and I always ask him, can you still take KG one-on-one? And he always says, ask him. So I ask you, Bardo against Gill, one-on-one, up to 11, ones and twos, what happens?
Ask him.
Come on, man.
Okay, well, you can ask me. I see Stephen Bardo at the gym all the time, and those knees ain't working like they used to. And
he's too pretty now, Kendall. He's too pretty.
He's too pretty. He's become the prettiest commentator in the business now.
All right, so well, I'll ask him, and then he'll tell me to ask you. So we'll just keep this cycle going. All righty. Sounds good.
Kendall, great work, man. Great to have you back on Comcast, and great to have you on today.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All righty.
Kendall Gill, the former Chicago Bull, and some cool stuff on Johnny Bock. I'm actually going to tell a Johnny Bock story coming back here from when I interviewed him way, way, way back in the day. Plan your home improvement and DIY project Sunday mornings on WGN-TV. Watch House Smarts with Lou Manfredini at 10:30, followed by Weekend Workbench at 11. Sam, are you leaving me? Are you going out to the United Center right now?
I am going to stay until we hit the pregame.
All right.
And then I'm going to drive the speed limit the whole way there.
I'll get a police escort for you. 720 WGN. Spoke a little too soon. Patriots actually have the ball back. We're wrapping up the beat here. Blackhawks hockey coming up the bottom of the hour. Sam and I, by the way, we're heading out to Naperville for the next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour.
Are we?
Well, Steve Cochran doesn't know that we're going to show up.
Oh.
I figured we would just go, me and you. We can enjoy the Steve Cochran Show. It's a live broadcast at Egg Harbor Cafe this Friday, January the 29th, 6 to 10. Sam and I will be in the corner doing our own sports show.
Playing dice. Shooting dice, sorry.
Having a little sum. Start your day off right and come enjoy the cafe's special breakfast creation, the Very Berry Pancakes, an exclusive price just for you during the broadcast. Visit the events page, WGNRadio.com, for details. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate, Chicago's own Good Hands. Do you remember Johnny Bock at all, youngster?
I mean, he got fired by Jerry Cross in 94. I knew who he was. I knew what he did. And, of course, he was here again, I think, 2006 to 2008. But I didn't have much interaction with him until just recently. Howard Moore would bring him to UIC practice, and he would watch and instruct and draw plays on that old notebook in his cursive handwriting, and his hands would shake. So I got to talk to him a little bit, but you've had more experience with him.
Love Howard Moore, by the way. That's I love that his name just got
back at Wisconsin now.
Good for Howard. Great man. So Johnny was, he's assistant coach for the Bulls. And this is, I think, the year before they won the championship. They used to practice at the old Multiplex, which was a standard health club that anybody could go to. And I go down and see Johnny, and I knew he was a nice guy, so I was writing for the school newspaper at good old Highland Park High School, the Shoreline, which eventually I got fired from. But I go and I ask him, can I interview you? And he says, yes, he's a high school guy, right? And he lets me in the office, and I start talking about the team, and I had a bit of an agenda on a one Jerry Krause, who was not my favorite Bulls general manager. And, you know, I asked him some questions about Jerry, and he was pretty darn open that Jerry Krause was not his favorite guy.
Wow.
And then 4 years later, you know, they win three titles, and he's extremely popular, and the players love him. But, you know, some of the stories out there, him and Jerry had a disagreement, and then...
Over Scottie Pippen, because Krause wanted to trade Pippen.
Oh, right.
So goes the story, and Bach said, you're insane if you want to trade Pippen.
Which, by the way, David Kaplan, who I believe used to work at this radio station, blew up that trade. He reported that trade, and Seattle went nuts. And
Was it Pippen for Kemp?
Yes, and Seattle management got cold feet and didn't do the deal. So Cap saved three titles, but he didn't get Johnny Bach back, so he didn't get it all done. Blackhawks hockey coming up, 720 WGN.